Welcome to the Morning Glory Project, Stories of Determination. I'm your host, Betsy Graziani Fassbender. Like in nature, we see determined flowers and vines clinging to life and seeking light, so are Morning Glory people. And in this podcast, I'll interview writers, activists, artists, entrepreneurs, survivors and thrivers, and trailblazers of all kinds. These are folks that have been determined to get over, under, around, and through the obstacles that face them, or to seize the opportunities that come before them. I find these people inspiring and amazing. I know you will too. Today on the Morning Glory Project, I'm happy to welcome Damian Posey. He is an award-winning Bay Area mentor, affectionately known as Uncle Damian to his community. As a low-income boy of color in the inner city, young Damian chose an all-too-frequent turn, which led him toward a life of criminal behavior, gunfire exchange that resulted in his being shot 5 times, and ultimately incarceration. During his 10-year incarceration, Damian experienced an awakening in which he realized that he wanted his daughter to have a better role model than he'd been, and that young people were following him into his destructive life patterns. If he could lead them there, Damian reasoned, he could lead them to a better, more productive, healthier, nonviolent life. Today, Damian devotes himself to helping young people avoid the path he took. After a decade of his work, Damian is now a sought-after motivational speaker who works in collaboration with hip-hop preacher Eric Thomas and was hired to work on San Francisco Mayor London Breed's campaign. His upcoming podcast, Once a Monster, Now a Mentor, and YouTube videos under the title Uncle Damian Speaks are other means by which Damian hopes to offer inspiration and ideas for those who seek a better path. Welcome, Damian, to the Morning Glory Project. I'm so glad you're here today.
Hey, how you doing? I'm over here blushing a little bit, man.
Well, I'm happy to make you blush.
Every time I hear, even though it's me and I'm living through it, man, this, that transition is just, it gets emotional sometimes, man. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, let's hang there for a second, because I imagine that must be so different for the first hunk of your life, your youth and young adulthood. You weren't being praised. People weren't saying such good things about you. So it must feel like quite a transition for somebody to read that bio. And believe me, I had to edit that bio down. There are a lot more miracles in this bio than I had time to even include in that introduction. So tell me what that feels like.
It's humbling, you know, it's humbling, and it gives me hope. And you know, that's what I'm trying to push out here. I'm like, you know, if I can change and be better, then anybody can do it, you know, regardless of your circumstances. And through my enlightenment and just my research and the stuff that I'm doing, I'm learning about more individuals like myself. I'm not, you know, it's not just me, but it's other people who've had rough starts and broke through it and now are excelling in life and trying to make a better world for other people and not being so selfish, you know. So it's definitely humbling, and I'm honored to, you know, have been selected by, you know, whatever higher power you may believe in to embark on this journey.
Well, I'm happy that you selected to follow that lead, by the way, because I think it's a cooperation between your higher power and your choice.
Right.
Clearly, that's where you are. Well, Damian, tell us a bit about what you just called your rough start. Tell me about the beginning years for you.
Well, my mother was 16 years old when she had me. So, and I like to start off with that because, you know, a lot of young people are attracted to me and they hear me and they follow what I'm saying. So I like to start off with that because I know how hard it is just being a teenager. And then on top of that, having a child, you know, in and of itself and not having a whole lot of support. I think my mother had a little bit of support. My grandparents, my great grandparents, actually my grandparents' parents, because my grandparents lived in the South in Baton Rouge and my great grandparents were up here. And my mom was just like me. She was, you know, a wild child per se. So she like ran from Louisiana to California to be a mother, grandparents. So just thinking back, you know, about when I was 16 and how wild I was, I know, you know, having a child that at that age could not be easy on so many different platforms. So introducing a child into that world, is a rough start out the gate.
And so that led you in what way? So how was it being born of a less mature mom who was mm-hmm. her own wild child self in her own way? And where did that lead you? Where were you in your youth?
That led me to just searching. You know, my mom was young. Now, I say she's young, but I give her credit. You know, she's a beautiful individual and she just was following her heart. And I'm grateful for her following her heart, or we wouldn't be having this conversation, you know, because I'm pretty sure somebody probably was telling her don't have the baby and all that kind of stuff. But she has some courage and she has some faith and some beliefs, or, you know, and I'm hoping, you know, we never had this conversation, but I'm hoping she just didn't want to. A trinket, a toy. A lot of these kids, like, they, oh, that's cute, I want a baby, you know, like, they had these little dogs and they think it's all fun and games, but, you know, this is a human life. But in through that, you know, things weren't, probably didn't go as she planned, and we were rough. We were on welfare, you know, moving house to house, stuff of that nature, eating at a lot of different, you know, homeless shelters, stuff of that nature. I remember in the younger years, I really remember standing in those long welfare lines. I don't know if I'm familiar with that, but like now they like send you money on a card and food stamps, all that stuff. But back in the day, you have to wait in this long line to like get these food boxes, to get the powdered eggs and the powdered milk and the block of cheese and the can of peanut butter and get the little assistance, you know, that they were giving to you. So I seen that, and I think that kind of made me upset. I was living in communities where other kids were dealing with the same thing, lack of male leadership. So it was like kind of like the blind leading the blind, and the adults that were around that were guiding the young people, they were telling us to do bad stuff, man, just to keep it flat out honest, man. They were telling me to sell drugs, you know, pimp, shoot, showing me not, you know, not really teaching me how to be a man per se in the real world, but how to be, you know, a young kid on the street. You know, in some ways it helped me survive, but at the same time, same token, it gave me a miseducation.
So it seems like it kind of was necessary for survival, but it also was tearing you up and sending you in a direction that was pretty dangerous. So you ended up committing crimes, frankly.
A lot of them.
And that led to juvenile hall and group home and teenage ranches and those kinds of things. And ultimately, to being shot.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
So I grew up primarily in juvenile hall, YGC. That's like my second family. You know, foundation is so important, man. When kids, we think kids are just young and can't learn too much. But I mean, personally, I believe like 8, 9, 10, 11, you got to start instilling some stuff up from birth, actually. But really 8, 9, 10, 11, you got to really start instilling certain core values into your child, you know, because then they're going to start really developing when they get 12, 13, 14, who they are, what are they, you know, they learning, how their attitudes and stuff are going to be. Because, you know, I started going to juvenile hall at a young age, like 11, 12 years old. And I just got indoctrinated into that culture to where it was just okay for me to be out the house and be locked up. My house wasn't all that great. You know, like I said, my mother had some struggles, you know, so it wasn't no thing for me. At times, I even thought it was better if I was locked up, because then, you know, she didn't have to feed me and she didn't have to, you know, worry about me. And in tune, I was also out there in the streets trying to do some things, trying to help take care of the family. She never really condoned it, but she understood what I was trying to do, you know, even though she was mad and used to chase me around like she was the police. But, you know, by the time I was 12, 13 years old, I was real elusive. And, you know, I was a young man, and I was out there. I was making my own decisions. I had my own car, my first car, when I was 13 years old, you know. So, you know, I used to be riding around the city and stuff of that nature. I knew a lot of different kids from being locked up. So I knew a lot of different kids from different neighborhoods. So I traveled around a lot. But, yeah, I was in and out of juvenile hall all of my young life, and it did lead to me getting shot. I got shot the first time when I was like about to turn 13, just nicked on the side of my leg. But I was out there on Geneva gang banging, you know, stuff of that nature. Another case was another individual being upset over a female, you know, and another time was actually being in the wrong place at the wrong time, mistaken identity But being in the place where I was at, you know, I was on 3rd Street and it was a high violent crime area. Like anybody could get shot. Like, you know, you got to be aware of, you know, people, places and things, you know, that you hang around at. But, you know, I got hit.
It sounds like the whole time was the wrong place and the wrong time.
Right.
The whole, yeah,
right. That's a great observation.
Not just that day, but the whole thing. And so ultimately, because of various gun charges and other crimes, you ultimately went to prison jail for what? It was a 10-year sentence?
Yeah, I was sentenced to 10 years in federal prison by the United States government. And that was one of the scariest things ever. You know, even though I was a quote unquote a hardened gangster by that time, but to see that paperwork, like the United States versus Damien Posey, like that's, man, I'm like, me against everybody, man. I'm not, you know, wow. You know what I mean? I didn't disrespect everybody. I ain't trying to be against everybody. You know, that was a humbling moment. But yeah, sentenced to 10 years.
And so in prison, mm-hmm. there's an irony here in the story that, as I understand it, because out of prison, here you were, as you describe yourself, kind of gangbanging and doing the things that you were necessary in a way for your survival. But in prison, it was a place of enlightenment for you, a place where you say you had an awakening. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yes, I was sent to this school on the East Coast in Philly, Concordville, Pennsylvania, to be exact. It's like a school for like all of the baddest kids from all over the country. They closed it down right now, but I heard they're going to open it back up because they used to beat us. But that's a whole nother story. But I learned about the Civil Rights Movement because I was working at the library and I started watching these videos called Eyes on the Prize. And it kind of like planted a seed of like some Black pride in me. I never really was aware of stuff like that. Nobody had really taught us about that. You hear a little stuff in school about Martin Luther King and all that, but it's really got deep about the Black Panthers and all that. So that planted a seed in me. So when I got to prison, I just started thinking about more stuff. Of course, you know, being sentenced to 10 years is a humbling and awakening experience in and of itself, you know, and I had my daughter when I was 19 and she was coming up on 2 years when I got sentenced to this. And I wasn't the best father out the gate. I was young. You know, I was kind of doing what I could to take care of my daughter, but I was still in the streets. So I wasn't as connected with her as I should have been. But when I went to prison and, you know, I thought how I lost her and everything else, you know, I just started thinking more. I just started really thinking. I had a lot of time to myself to really think and, you know, started asking myself questions like, you know, I've been in and out of jail all my life. Is this all I'm going to do? Is this all I'm worth? You know, and then I looked at one picture of my daughter and she looked just like me and it kind of scared me. And I was like, man, I got to do better. I got to do better for her, for myself. And, you know, I've been blessed to just have natural charisma. So I've always been kind of like a leader a little bit. So a lot of my peers looked up to me or looked to me and did some of the things I did. I was influential. So I was seeing people doing the things that I was doing. And then especially when I was in prison and you probably never been to prison, but you know, like when you go there and like your friend comes, you see him, you're like, oh, you know, just like if you're at a house party and you see your friend who you haven't seen in a while, you're like, hey, what's up, man? Well, how you doing? Everybody's all happy. But then I'm thinking like, man, we locked up. Why aren't we happy? Like, this dude, this boy, he's our friend. He's in jail with us. That's not cool. You know what I mean? The bright side of it, you'd be like, well, at least he's not dead or whatever. You know what I mean?
So it is kind of interesting because it's as if the prison life became more of a home than your home. You know, you said that at least in there, you didn't have to worry about your mom needing to feed you. You got time to think. And it's like you suddenly didn't have the distractions of the world. You didn't have the need to go protect your area or, you know, earn money or drive your car or act up or do the things that you were doing. You were just there with your thoughts and you had these seeds of pride, these seeds of worth, I guess, right, is what I want to say. And it sounds like part of your awakening was just realizing that you were worth more than sitting in a jail cell.
Right. Definitely. definitely some of that. And the those seeds are very important. And I got to stress that we got to let our young people know how important they are, how valuable they are at a young age, even if they don't understand it. You know what I mean? That's part of some of the things that I do now. Like, I work with a lot of young people, and unfortunately, I know a lot of them are not going to get it right now. You know, they're not going to understand. They're not going to hear me right now. But one day, it's going to kick in. That's what I tell a lot of my youngsters. A lot of my youngsters is like, I love you, Unc. I feel you, but I'm out here. I'm in the field. I'm with the ish. That's what they say nowadays. I'm with the ish, you know.
What does that mean? I'm with the ish.
I mean, I'm with the shit. I don't know. I don't want to curse on your
show.
That's all right. I mean, with the shit. I mean, it's like I'm in the field. I'm like, I'm about this life. You know what I mean? I'm about this life, and I'm ready to deal with whatever comes with it, whether it be jail or prison. But that comes from a lack of understanding your value, because once you understand how much you're worth, you won't do small stuff like, you know. And when I speak a lot, you know, I'm into positive affirmations. You know, I go speak at the juvenile hall every Monday night, Monday and Wednesday night with Omega Boys Club. We have a boys group at the juvenile hall. And when every time I start my speeches, I make them recite after me. I say, I am a king. I make them say that three times. I am a king. I am a king. I do not have to go to prison. I do not have to die young. I make them say that. I can be a leader in my community. You know, and one thing that I tell them is that, you know, there's certain things that kings don't do. You know, kings don't, you know, the majority of the time, you got some warrior kings who be on the field, but then a lot of times, you know, kings don't be on the field fighting their own battles and stuff of that nature, man. So I'll be trying to get the young guys to think more of a king mentality and not peasants. Like, you got to carry yourself like royalty so that you could do royal things, you know?
Well, that sounds like you're planting the same kind of seeds that you were just getting a little bit of from the library for yourself in your own youth.
Exactly. But I'm amplifying it because nobody really amplified it in my life. I feel like if I had somebody to help me amplify it in my life early on, that I might have took it up early, because I'm still the same person. The stuff that I'm doing now, I could have been doing a long time ago. I just didn't, you know, realize I had this potential, and everybody has the potential.
I love that word amplify, that you're saying that, you know, people, the kids on the street that you're working with, they may be getting little seeds even from other folks, or from their church, or from their grandparent, or from wherever they might be getting that. But your job is to amplify that. It's kind of like, I don't know, organic fertilizer. You know, you're fertilizing the seeds that are being planted, and you call it giving back, but on steroids.
Giving back, but on steroids, because I'm just blessed with a different type of energy. Like, you know, I don't sleep that much now. I don't advise this. This is just my own personal things. You know, I know they got a lot of research behind sleep and rest and all that kind of stuff, but you know, I look at it like I was resting for 10 years almost, you know. So I just be jump. I'm 24/7. I'm blessed to work at an amazing organization to where I can help case manage kids that are on juvenile probation. But this is 24/7 with me, man. It's no clock on or off. I'm just on it because I know, like, you never know when you might get that phone call or when a young person needs some support of that nature, or one of my folks on the streets, my homeless family, you know, might need some support. So I'm 24/7. I'm out there as much as I can. I'm giving as much of myself as possible. The majority of things that I do, if you happen to see one of my Instagrams, you'll see me doing a lot of stuff, and a lot of that stuff is out of my own pocket and of my own energy. But I just, like, it's a call, and it's just, I wake up every morning. That's what I'm pulled to do. Sometimes I don't even understand it myself. I'll be like, man, why am I, you know, because if you know me from before, shout out to the people who listen to this who know me from before. Like, you know, it's like night and day. It's like night and day.
That's sort of the nature of an awakening, right? You're transformed into something that you weren't before. It sounds also to me, Damien, like what's really inspiring to me about your story is this. Yes, you do talk, you give motivational speeches, you mentor kids, and you do the talking stuff. Mm-hmm. But in addition to that, you do way more than talk.
Oh yeah,
you're pulling in resources and helping kids out and getting kids clothing to go on job interviews, and And can you say a little bit about the practical kinds of things you and those that are kind of in your organization are doing?
Really putting boots on the ground, really putting in that work. It's one thing to talk. Talking is good. And that's, you know, some of the conflict I have. But yeah, I'm out here putting in this work, like you said, connecting young people with jobs. With my organization, the City East, we're feeding the homeless every first Saturday of the month. And we'll also have another sponsored event in the middle of the month most times. But those are one of the things that I'm doing, like I was saying, amplifying it. Like I bring the kids to that because I need you to see. I need you to understand if you don't handle your business, this is a possibility for you to be sleeping on the streets. It's very, very cold in San Francisco right now, rainy and wet. You know, you need to do everything you can early to make sure that you're not one of these individuals. What else do I do? I care so much. I'm taking young people on outings, showing them different stuff, introducing them to people who they might not have met to inspire them. I do a lot of events. I'm blessed to work with Livable Cities and Sunday Streets. I produced 8 events this last summer with the young people, helping them pursue their dreams, their talents, you know, dancing, music, poetry, instrument, sports. I'm like a one-stop shop for resources. That's what I want to be. And it's not all about me because I'm like just the connector. I'm, you know, because I'm not a clinician. I work with a lot of young people who are dealing with a lot of trauma, a lot of mental illness, you know, and I'm not qualified to do those things, but I'm qualified to get you to the people who can. So I make connections. I've been blessed to, like you read in my bio, work with the mayor on down. And I say the mayor because, you know, that's kind of like the top in the city. But anything in between, you know, I put on a comedy show for the kids, all kind of stuff, like, you know, because if you tell me what you want to do, I'm going to try to help produce that for you. I'm connected with a bunch of different people, photographers, videographers, mechanics, whatever you want to do, doctors, lawyers. If a kid tell me you want to be a lawyer, I'm like, are you sure you want to be a lawyer? Like, yeah, okay, I'm going to connect you with one of my lawyer friends. They're going to mentor you once or twice a week, but you got to be serious about it. You know what I mean?
Well, Damien, I'm reminded, a friend of mine always says that the world is divided into 4 kinds of people. People who add, people who subtract, people who multiply, and people who divide. Mm. And it sounds to me like you went from being somebody who subtracted to somebody who multiplies. Right. That you take what you know, who you know, how you know to do things and put them all together. It's so inspiring. And I know that you've helped to mentor many, many kids in the neighborhood, that you've helped many homeless people find their way. And I'm grateful for that. So I'm going to ask you a last question or two here. What do you need? What do you need to keep you going? And is there a place that folks that are listening might be able to go to learn about you and to help you?
First and foremost, I need prayer. Please pray for me, whoever you believe in. I don't, you know, it don't really matter. You know, I need prayer because this is a labor of love. It's dangerous what I'm doing. We haven't got to that aspect because, believe it or not, there are people in the world who don't want me doing the stuff that I'm doing. You know, you could just imagine if you had a workforce of young people working for you, selling your drugs or doing your dirt for you, and I'm talking to those kids and I'm changing their lives and I'm getting them away from that, you might not be so happy about that. Mm. You know what I mean? So I definitely need prayer first and foremost. You can contact me at Uncle Damien Speaks, Damien, Uncle Damien Speaks, on my Instagram. I also have another Instagram, Once a Monster, Now a Mentor. The number 1NCE _ a monster, now a mentor. It's 2 different things because, like, my Once a Monster, Now a Mentor page is like the community stuff that I do. And my Uncle Damien Speaks page is, of course, my motivational speaker page. And, you know, that's just, you know, something to give people a platform to bring me out. If you want to support me, bring me out. Get the value from it. I don't, you know, I'm not asking for nothing. For free, donations to thecityeast.org is always appreciated on my behalf. We're, like I said, we feed the homeless every first Saturday of the month, and then we do another sponsored event in the middle of the month. I do it regularly, go out there myself, but, you know, bring me out to speak or share my page, anything I think, build awareness, recommend me to your school, to the juvenile hall, somebody that might get bring me out and give me an honorarium to help me keep going what I'm doing. And I just want to just spread this love and this mission.
I got to do some of that. And I want to tell listeners that to watch Damien interact with kids is a really inspiring thing. And also, I have to say, you know, I'm not an inner city kid, and I'm not a young Black boy, and I'm not any of those things. And so I like talking to you to learn more about a life that isn't my own, but also how I can be of help in a way that's real. And helping somebody like you on the ground, knowing what you know, living how you've lived, seems a lot more effective than my stepping in and doing it. So because I'm ignorant of that world, and I want to learn, but I also want to accept humbly the differences that we have and support the folks that are best to provide that. So Damien, your story, once a monster, now a mentor, is an exciting transition that you were behaving monstrously. I don't think you ever were really a monster, but you acted like one. And now you certainly are an inspiring person. I thank you so much for coming to the Morning Glory Project. And those interested in supporting some of Damien's efforts can find him, as he mentioned, on YouTube, on the web under Once a Monster, Now a Mentor, or under Uncle Damien Speaks, and it's Damien. And if you want to contribute to the efforts of feeding San Francisco's homeless, and by the way, it is pouring today, and I think about those folks out on the streets, so you can contribute to thecityeats.org, and that's a way to help Damien. Damien, thank you for your determination, for being such a beautiful bloom that came from such a difficult place. I'm honored to have you here on the Morning Glory Project.
Thank you so much for having me. And I want to say that I appreciate what you're doing, getting these stories out there, doing what you do. You are an amazing individual of yourself, and I aspire to be like you. I'm not an author. I'm working on it, you know. I'm not a writer per se. I'm working on it. I'm trying to make myself better so that I can be better for my communities and I can inspire others who came from my situations that look to me and be like, you know, if he could do it, I could do it. So, you know, I'm working on making these programs great, making my city great, making myself better so that, like I said, I can inspire the young people, because it's hard to believe it if you don't see it. But I'm doing my best. I'm doing my best out here, and I appreciate you.
Well, I'll look forward to future crossings of our paths. Thanks so much for being part of the Born in Glory Project.
Thank you.
Reflecting on my conversation with Damien today, I'm struck by how universal one of his messages was. Whatever our backgrounds, whatever our differences, there's something that ties us all together. And that's this. When Damien was behaving in ways that were self-destructive and destructive to others in his community, he didn't feel like he was worth anything. He hadn't discovered his own value. He's the same guy today as he was then in terms of being charismatic, getting people to follow him. But when he didn't feel like he was worth anything, he used that in a destructive way. I wonder how many of us, whatever our circumstances, whatever our stations in life, have chosen unhealthy paths during a time when we didn't feel of value, when we felt worthless. And the takeaway, the extra bloom for me, is that we have the opportunity to let others know that they matter, that we see them, that they are worth something. And that can change a path. We can plant the seeds and hope that other people will nurture them and that they'll have a chance to bloom. Thanks for listening to the Morning Glory Project. I so appreciate your time, and I hope that you find these stories as inspiring as I do. If you have enjoyed this episode, feel free to subscribe so you can hear all of them. You can find us wherever you find podcasts. And if you feel like sharing us out on social media so other people can find us, that would be great too. Thanks for listening, and now go out and bloom.